Record. Okay, we are recording. Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to When East Meets West. This is Kenaz Filan. My friend Anaf Ibn Kais is with us again. Hello, Anaf.
Good morning to where you're at, Sir Kenaz, and afternoon where I'm at. Yeah, I mean, as you were saying right before we started recording, the doom cometh with speed and vigor. So
Oh yeah,
let's get
no, it's
started.
just, what is the old saying? You have weeks where decades happen. We've had a couple of those in rapid succession. This has been a really, again, I think it starts out with, well, ended with the collapse of the yen. You know, 34 year low to a 34 year low, and I see once again the American press, well, this is a matter for concern. It's not a catastrophe. I'm like, dropping to a 34-year low is a catastrophe. I mean,
I mean,
you can say, well, it's not a catastrophe. Well, then what is? I mean, th dropping 30, 34%, losing 34% of your value in a country that relies on imports for a lot of things, it's going to be rough. They've got to restabilize it.
Bank of Japan has been doing a lot of finicky stuff for the past few decades or so. There's an excellent book on the subject. It's called The Princes of the Yen. So anyone with a lot of economics acumen or people who are into reading that kind of stuff, you are most welcome to check that out, dear listeners. That being said, no, you're absolutely correct, good sir. I mean, 34-year low, this is basically like an unmitigated disaster. I think last I checked, yen was 158 yen to the dollar, which again, like you only saw these types of numbers back in the 1990s, like late 1980s, right? So, and Japan of 2024 is a completely different animal compared to back then, right? Like back then, they still had some population growth, they had some labor force, right?
Yep.
And with regard to the current account surpluses and all these other measures that economists love to harp on about, all of them, those were still nice, right? When I say nice, I mean compared to today, right? So what we have right now is really the shoe is dropping with regard to the American dollar. And people talk a lot about, oh, what will happen when our treasuries get dumped en masse. And people start using some other stuff, and dollar
I
no longer
used
is
to
the
get that,
reserve
and it would,
currency.
what I'd get is, it will never happen. Like, nobody is going to replace the dollar. I remember hearing that when they opened the sanctions, that was, I think to some extent, still is the feeling. Nobody's going to replace the dollar. The dollar will be strong forever. And it's like, again, this is insanity. Serious people don't think like this.
Precisely. And we are about to put that theory to the test, good
Yeah.
sir. We've arrived at that moment.
Yeah, I
We've
mean,
arrived at
it's
that moment.
nothing goes up forever. That's, I mean, that is a simple, no, nothing grows constantly except cancer. It's just and we don't really. And again, I see what I call the dysfunctional doomers here. Oh, well, it doesn't matter what we do. The US Federal Reserve will just print more money. And it's like, okay, you're missing the problem here. Yeah, the US Reserve can print more money. They've been doing it for a long time. In fact, they've been doing it so long, they've pretty much maxed it out. The trick isn't printing money, the trick is getting people to accept your funny money.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, because you can print all the money you want, but if the people on the other side of the pond, right, whether it's like the Brits, the Japanese, or what have you, they have to accept your funny money, right? They have to take the cash, the monopoly money, whatever it is you're making, right? But no, good sir, we're about to put the theory to the test. Like 158, that's like a disastrous number. I mean, if you get to a point where, I don't know, it becomes 170, 180, 190, you're gonna see mass dumping. I don't know if you remember this, good sir, but Shinzo Abe, who used to be the prime minister, right? He was shot in the back of the head several months ago by like a former Navy person, right? And he made the firearm out of plastic, right? So no metal detector could detect it. So he made it out of plastic, shot Shinzo Abe and murdered him, right? So political assassinations have already begun in Japan, right? They're merely going to accelerate and whatnot. Bank of Japan, if they don't dump their US treasuries to try and get the 158 number back in control, right? We are in some big trouble, right? And Japan, basically, if Japan has like a populist revolt, it's probably going to be mass political violence, as I said earlier, but it's going to be a government, right, who takes power or takes charge at the end of it, who's not going to be pro-America. Let's put it politely. So the Americans at this point, right, they could decide, you know what, our Japanese vassal might be getting away from us, so we might have to do something, right? Which again will make things even more problematic. But yeah, the doom cometh. We've arrived at that point, right? Like a lot of the times we speak about hypotheticals. Oh, what happens if the dollar is dumped and so on and so forth, right? But it's not hypothetical anymore, folks. We've come to the real deal now.
I mean, absolutely. And I think what has impressed me is the way that we're seeing the U.S. diplomatic class. We've already got a hot conflict in Russia over Ukraine that I think everybody agrees has a non-trivial chance of turning into a genuine NATO-Russia ground conflict. Okay, that's potential front number one. We have a lot of stirrings with Iran and Israel. Israel would love to get us involved in this. I don't think we're going to be, but I mean, it could easily, depending on how much pressure and how much blackmail like they can put on our on American politicians, we might be in a second front, which would be Israel, which could even be two fronts because that's Israel and ultimately will involve fighting Iran. Now we have Blinken coming in. We're trying to take over TikTok. We're antagonizing China. Yeah, we want, do we want, like, we won a two-front war, 80 years ago because of our Herculean manufacturing capabilities. We don't
Precisely.
have those capabilities anymore. I mean, there's just, you have to start with political discussions with anything. You have to start with the reality on the ground. You play the hand you're dealt, not the hand you want. And it's, we don't have the manufacturing capacity. We're maxed out right now trying to feed the Ukraine conflict.
Pretty
We
much.
can't do that and feed Israel. Now,
Pretty
we
much.
can't throw a third and a fourth fight in here. Yeah, we can't ramp up that fast. It's not like, hello, I'd like to call the munitions factory company. Could you send me a munitions factory by Thursday? Oh, good. So will it be up by Monday? This is, it takes time. It takes months to years to get a factory up and running.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. And good sir, you mentioned Anthony Blinken, but I think on Chinese internet, right? And just to give our dear listeners and readers some idea of what happened, right? There was like a short clip of President Xi Jinping. He was talking to his diplomatic corps and he was like literally asking them, "Oh, he's here. How long is he going to stay here?" And they're like, "Oh, he's going to go away in the next day," right? Now, if you guys are not aware of the nuances of how the Chinese view the world, right, they give a lot of importance to what's called face, right? Face and saving face, right? But the fact that President Xi Jinping allowed himself to be filmed that way and to utter those words and to allow that to go on to Chinese internet, because we all know that Chinese internet is heavily regulated by the government and other big bodies, right? But the fact that he allowed that shows how much contempt, utter contempt, and disdain Chinese leadership have for the Americans, right? And we've already gotten to the point where I think China knows what's coming. They know that the Americans will sanction them for some bullshit reason, probably like, oh, you're selling, I don't know, you're buying rather oil from Iran, or you're doing XYZ, or oh, you know, your whatchamacallit. I think the latest stupid nonsense they've come up with is oh, your shipbuilding practices are not sound. Like, bro, we make 200 times more ships than you, right? Shut up. Well, just shut up.
I
You're not
saw
relevant
that
anymore.
article I sent you in the Defense Times. Well, the Chinese bombers aren't as good as American bombers. It's like, well, yes, in World War II, the American planes weren't as good as Japanese or German planes, but we could make more of them.
Exactly.
A dozen planes that are 80% as good as your plane will beat your single plane.
There you go.
And it's just, you're missing this. This was the trick to how we won World War II, and you're getting ready to set us up. This time, we're going to play the guys with the shiny new toys.
Yeah, no, it's a quite it's really baffling. It's really baffling that they've forgotten the lessons, right? And everyone talks about like gadgets and technology and all this stuff. Like, I just tell them that you do realize that Germany lost the war, right?
Yeah, I mean,
It's like
you see here the people like it I continue to be astounded. You get better discussions about global politics. I mean, I'm not bragging, I'm stating a simple fact here. We provide better discussions about global politics than you will get in mainstream media articles. There are dozens of Substacks that do a better job of this than mainstream media. It's how badly the media in America has declined with regard to report, just foreign reporting and journalistic skills.
Oh, they're not journalists, good sir. They are just mouthpieces for the regime. That's all they are at this point.
Yeah, that's it. Just it is nobody. I see people making comments. Well, they got 99% of the missiles. It's like, yes, but they got 100% of, it's they got 100% of the hypersonic ones that landed in Israel. That's the important point. It's these people. If you're working as a journalist for a social, like for a social page, and you're the guy that chronicles parties and events, yeah, you could take a press release and you basically put it in verbatim. That's you never do that when you're talking with foreign leaders about foreign policy. You never do that with government officials. You always start with the assumption they're telling me what they want to hear. What, how does it match with the facts on the ground? And if you do that, it's very clear. Everything that they're saying doesn't match with the facts on the ground.
For a lot of so-called American leaders, right, their head is permanently stuck in the 1950s, right? They think America is this big industrial powerhouse or what have you. They don't realize that America actually produces roughly the same amount of steel, like what, 85, 85, whatchamacallit, 85 kilotons or something. I think that's the number, right? Per annum, which is roughly the same as Russia does. And Russia's got like what, less than half the population. And when you look at the number for China produces more than 10 times the steel that America produces, right? Just to give our dear listeners and readers an idea of how bad that is, in the 1960s, right, America produced about five times more than that. So instead of 85, I think the number was like 400 something kilotons, right? And back then, I think global steel production was about 500 or 600 kilotons in total. So America produced roughly two-thirds or greater of the total world steel back then, right? And today it's less than 5 or 10%. So America is irrelevant. See, this is the point I'm trying to make. It's like the reason nobody listens to America is that they know what America is about. America is about regime change. It's about toppling governments. It's about doing damage to women and kids, right? Blowing up hospitals, the usual nonsense and whatnot, and then sending not diplomats, but like emissaries from the Empire of Lies. And these people then lecture others about how to lead their lives, right? And, you know, I think when the Chinese were snubbing Blinken, right, they were doing so with the understanding that, you know what, I think the world already knows what America is and what America isn't. So let's just put this out there, right? And yeah, I mean, Blinken was basically humiliated. He came back from that so-called diplomatic meeting or whatever, and then he started lecture China about their practices. They're like, oh, Iran and all this other stuff. And we had this discussion, frank discussion, I think that's the word he used, and all that other stuff. Like, bro, you're not a diplomat. You're an emissary of the empire. Nobody takes you seriously. And if you want to play the game with China, all right. I guess, the
You're playing
tri-civilization conflict.
diplomacy with the Middle Kingdom. You're playing diplomacy with people who have been playing diplomacy since like the ceramic age.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
You're a 200-year-old country. That's the pr America doesn't. America never really got its clock cleaned in a major war on its soil. There's like one American subgroup that did. Southern Americans, you'll notice they have a very different culture than Northern Americans. So, but it's like we have this, we have no experience in running an empire. We've done it for about 40 years. We think we can still do that. We need to be doing a gradual unwinding of our empire because it's now, we need to move the terminus back. It's unsustainable. It's too big. We're too far spread. There are too many places for conflict. We can't handle a multi-front conflict. We don't have to say that to the world, but we have to acknowledge that to ourselves.
Precisely, precisely. Definitely, definitely. And the thing is, right, the Japanese collapse and the Chinese snubbing, I think these are all interconnected. I think when they saw Blinken show up, they saw it as a sign of weakness, not of strength, number one. And number two, like, the Chinese are smart, right? They know all this stuff. Like, everything we're talking about, the Chinese already know about, right? So when we say, for example, I think in one of the previous episodes, we were saying that, America cannot prosecute a war against China anymore because they cannot move stuff from the Western seaboard to the theater of battle, right? If there is a war that breaks out, like a full-scale kinetic war, you're only going to have really 1 or 2 weeks in which, okay, whatever assets are already in the Philippines, Japan, Taiwan, those can be used. And after the 1 or 2 weeks, they're either blown up to bits or they've been attrited away or so on and so forth, right? So basically, as long as the Americans can somehow limit the war to 1 or 2 weeks, miraculously, only then can they have a quote unquote victory, right? Now, when we said this, right, like, some people were DMing me and they're like, oh, this is rubbish. And I'm like, listen, everything I've said is public knowledge, right? And the Chinese already know this. Like, you can check the Navy people, and they put out like reports with regard to, okay, how we cannot even repair build our ships, we cannot repair our ships. And most importantly, we don't even have enough crew for the minimum numbers anymore, right? So, no, that's the thing, good sir. At this point, I think people are, shall we say, it's a slow learning curve, right? People are beginning to realize that actually we say we're hot stuff, but we're actually not.
I think the Eisenhower, an aircraft carrier and a destroyer, just left the Red Sea and they're heading into the Eastern Mediterranean. They're moving out of the range. I mean, you're moving out of the way of the drones and the missiles. You're running with your tail between your legs. At very best, you ran out of ammunition and you now have to sail to an American port that has the type of ammunition you need to reload your ships. So it's like we're not doing, we can't sustain. Could we win a war with Iran? If we were willing to sustain a few million deaths or casualties, possibly. We're not, so that's not even realistic. Our ships are big targets to drones and like missiles at this point.
Yeah, it's a legacy system. Like you were saying, knights in Agincourt, we can use something else. We can probably say like German Teutonic knights being like piked by the Bohemian Hussars, right? Whatever is the case, right? America's on the losing side of this, right? And all this like multi-billion, $100 billion ships or whatever, it's all rubbish. It's all rubbish. Like, if you've got a $5 million tank and it's getting blown up by a $300 weapon system, you've already lost. You simply, the magnitude of the defeat simply hasn't set in yet, right? And like, people can lecture me about how high rather their IQ is and all this other nonsense, but like, the only thing that really matters is the practical on the battlefield result. And so far, you ain't getting
I mean,
the
I'm
result.
hearing about IQs. I've never heard that like your IQ can get high enough to make you bulletproof.
Precisely,
You know, it's I've
precisely.
never heard your IQ can give you superhuman strength. It's like you still, this is, we're coming to a point where you need conflict and a higher IQ. A lot of times the skills that are favored for high IQ people are not the skills that are good in hand-to-hand combat. I mean, that's
Exactly.
how it is. You know, if thinkers don't tend to be good, don't tend to make good warriors. Very occasionally you get somebody who's both. It's not real common.
Yeah, precisely. No, people need to wake up. I mean, I know that's a very cliche thing to say, but I'll say it anyway. People need to wake up to the reality that the American Empire is basically in the late stages of the Soviet Union at this point, right? I mean, Malcolm Chiune said that he thinks we'll only have like a couple dozen months left. From his point of view, we're basically at 1988, 1989. So we're probably not going to make it to 2028, simply because we're seeing all these crises converge, right? One on top of the other, right? And again, whether it's the Japanese who are about to, basically at this point, it's almost a done deal, right? It's 158 yen per US dollar. But once it gets to like a higher number, eventually they will have to dump their US treasuries. You've got Blinken getting snubbed. And actually, good sir, we should actually expand on this topic more. Campus protests, right? Which I know a lot of people don't take seriously, right? They're like, oh, it's just a bunch of kids or whatnot. But no, good sir, I think you said something fascinating.
Yeah, campus protests. Yes, they're largely astroturfed. You know, I expect that both the Chinese and the Russians are involved in funding at least some, not all of the, you know, and I'm going to get back to that, of the protests. I mean, if they're not, they're idiots. This is a golden opportunity to split America. I mean, this is for very little money. Now, the thing with the campus protests is, despite that, yes, you know, they're going to be going home after the holidays. And, you know, yes, these are a lot of these people will scream any slogan that you want. But they're sending a message. I think there is a lot of genuine, widespread distaste and open hatred of the Zionist regime and its treatment of the Palestinian people. And any political leader who tries to get us involved in a war with Israel, who is overly supportive of Israel, is going to feel it. You know, this is going to become a third rail that kills your political career.
Precisely,
And that's
precisely.
really, you know, AIPAC can't, you know, AIPAC isn't going to go very far if they can buy a candidate for one term.
And the thing with the student protests is, as you were saying, good sir, like, we all know that not all of these are serious people. Some quite a few of them are, but there's people who are like professional protesters. Like, these are the people who get paid to put all that stuff's true, right? But there's people with genuine sentiment, right? The Palestine issue is a fundamental issue in the Muslim world, right? So Muslim students in particular, I fully expect most of them are serious, right? Obviously, you've got a bunch of lefties in there, they protest, whatever is the next hot topic issue, right? But that's not the main issue. The main issue is that civil society, ultimately, right, whether we like to admit it or not, right, past few decades or so, whether we like to admit it or not, folks, civil society is ultimately moved by these things that happen in the university campuses, right? If there's like mass protests and stuff, right, and I think, good sir, a while back we were having a Telegram conversation, you brought up Kent State, right?
Yeah.
Kent State was the small spark that lit the fire, right? And by the time the whole thing spread, right, a few years had passed, right? But America had to basically get itself out of Vietnam, right? In humiliation and defeat. And you could argue that Kent State played a key role in that. So people need to understand that this is not 1970s America. America today is heavily divided. It does not have the same economic, shall we say, economic baseline, right? I mean, 1970, people could still afford a house, they could still afford a car, they could still, like, I don't know, go to McDonald's or what, any of these other places, they could get their burger and whatnot. None of these are true anymore. Like, you go to, I don't know, American McDonald's today, the food is super expensive. I bring up McDonald's, by the way, because, like, that's like the cheap food that's available in America, right?
Okay,
And ultimately, yeah,
bringing up
ultimately,
McDonald's, my daughter loves McDonald's, my 12-year-old. Chicken nuggets for her.
Yeah.
I mean, chicken
Nice.
nuggets used to be $3.99. Like, we
Yes.
regularly bring her home $15 worth of chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
That's
That's
like,
it. That's
I
the
mean, we're
thing.
talking like a 150, 200% increase in those prices. It's like, that's why people get angry in the United States when you have some stuffed shirt explaining to you that inflation doesn't really happen, and you're spending like, $15 bringing your kid home a meal from McDonald's. People get annoyed.
Precisely, precisely. No, but I bring up McDonald's, but simply because I forget who said the quote. But revolution is always 3 meals away, right? That's what it is. So hyperinflation, or whatever it is we want to call it, right? Or if you see something like that where burgers and chicken nuggets are no longer affordable, that's when you know that America is about to fall apart. And the quickest way for that to happen, right? Obviously, I'm using the word quick in a relative sense, right? Because it's going to still take several months or so, right? But the quickest way for that collapse to happen, where like people are going into McDonald's and they can't afford Big Macs and McNuggets anymore, would be if the Germans start off that domino effect. Not the Germans, rather, sorry, the Japanese start off that domino effect, where they go, you know what? We are now at 195 yen to a US dollar. We cannot do this anymore. We have to dump our treasuries to stabilize the yen. That's the only route left. Once they start doing that, right, at that point, the question becomes, okay, what's the floor of the US dollar? And the Chinese are going to be like, eh, we think it's pretty low, right? So they're going to start dumping. And if China and Japan dump, that's basically it. That's game over. Philip Pilkington, right? I think I sent you the paper, but I think I have it open in front of me. So he did some calculations. He did some econometric calculations, some analysis, right? And according to him, right, the standard of living in America, right? So average daily income is $74.42 in America, right? Even though the current account balance as percentage of GDP, right? So this is like trade balances, right? So like, I think America has like a negative two, negative four, something in that range, right? Now, the funny thing is, good sir, when he ran the analysis, America is like a huge outlier. It's got a huge outlier. So it's got like $74.42 daily income, but it's got the negative account balance. So according to what his analysis showed, right, if there was something that happened in the world which got rid of the US dollar as a reserve currency entirely, what would that look like? Well, the daily income of the average person in America would drop from $74.42 to $31.92. So that's almost a 60% decline, right? So Americans would basically be living at a lifestyle which, let's shall we say, it's kind of like a Brunei lifestyle. Like, Brunei is a beautiful country on the island of Borneo, right? But like, you'd get to a point where the annual income, average annual income, would be like $12,000 or so per person, right? Which is basically catastrophic. It's just a big fat catastrophe at that point, right? So no, I mean, we are headed in that direction, and people are like, oh, the American people will never revolt. The, revolution will never happen. Well, my friend, if people don't eat for several days in a row, revolution's the only thing they've got left, because otherwise they're going to starve to death. So, that's how the
Yeah,
world works.
when people can't feed their kids, they will do anything to feed their kids. And when I say anything, I mean anything. This is like, you're to like what we're talking about here is going to be fairly close to, if not slightly worse than, the Soviet Union collapse. If it'll probably be worse, if only because, we have higher to fall than they did in, 1989, 1990 Russia.
Well, it's going to be worse because there's no underlying foundation. So in the case of the Soviet Union, the oligarchs took over during the decade of the 1990s, right? And the government employees did not get paid for several years, right? So they came to the workplace, right? So there were like cab drivers, there were like people in the subways. And if you talk to them, they would tell you, oh, yeah, I'm still doing this job, even though I've not been paid for 7 years in a row. And then you ask them, well, why are you doing it? And then he's like, well, I feel a duty to my fellow man, like my fellow countrymen. And so, I'm suffering, but hey, I'm going to barter with some people and I'll make it through, right? America does not have that same idea of itself, folks.
Yeah,
Let's put it that way.
when Russia fell, at this point, Stalingrad is still in living memory.
Yeah,
There's
exactly.
still people there who, yeah, they're mostly older people, but they remember what, like, they remember, starved corpses in the streets.
They remember Leningrad, they remember all these things, right? And
Yeah.
more importantly, right, it's not just a memory, it's also the fact that there was industry, right? And so, yes, the industries were taken over by the oligarchs, but the oligarchs basically knew how to maintain some semblance of order, right? In the case of America, that's not going to be the case, right? What's going to happen is the warlords, right, who we call the cartels, they're going to take over industry. They're going to take over all these places, right? And look, I know people have this big fat copium. They're like, oh, the white man will finally rise up and, kick the cartels out. Bro, that's not going to happen. Number one, you're not organized. That's the thing, first thing. Number two, there's too many of them. And number three, they've got better toys than you do. Okay. They got better toys than you do, right? That's just how it is, right? Some of these cartels, for example, they've got like the heavy duty drones, right? The ones which can, have loads of 100 kilo or more, right? So it doesn't matter how many firearms you have. You can have like a fancy sniper rifle. I don't know. You take photos of yourself with the fancy sniper rifle. You can have whatever other like shotgun you want. It doesn't matter if the heavy duty drone buzzes in 200 miles per hour, hits you, and blows off, your entire property, right? That's what you're dealing with when you're talking about fighting the warlords of our era, right? The cartels, right? But no, I was going on a tangent. I was ranting a bit, so I apologize for that.
No.
But what I was trying to get to was that even if the cartels take over the industry, whatever little is left in America, right? Because most of it's been hauled out. Even if they take it over, they're going to run it like a criminal enterprise. So they're not going to run it the same way the Russian oligarchs did, right? So the lot of the American people is going to be far, far worse. It's going to be very, very feudal. It's going to be almost like neo-feudal in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that coming because I think now, also, just getting back to the white man is going to come back and survive because, like all of a sudden the steppe herder gene is going to take in. Anybody at this day and age who is taking pictures of themselves with their weapons collection and showing them off on social media when they have like a profile that leans conservative or dissident, I'm not. You're not even not serious, you're an idiot. You need to keep that stuff low at this point. Yes, my Second Amendment, I know that. Yeah, my First Amendment, I know that. You should have the right to do all of these things. You don't. Welcome to the New World Order. You've been saying you live under tyranny. You gotta learn to start living that way. And part of it is you don't show off your weapons collection publicly.
I mean, these are the same people, right? Like a subset of these people. Like, I'm not saying all of them do this, right? But a subset of them, they went to Ukraine and they're like, oh, look, I'm gonna take several pictures of me carrying my weapon systems. And then the Russians are smart, right? They monitor these things and they're like, oh, where's this guy taking the photo from? Ah, I see, that's where he's taking the photo from. And then like at 2 a.m. Ukraine time, like they send in a salvo of missiles or drones or whatever, and they just kill the bastard. Like that's look, like white boys, I'm sorry, but that's basically what's gonna happen to you guys if you keep like doing the thing you're doing, right? The nature of warfare has changed. You can't just like, chest thump your way out of this, right? And most terrain in America is indefensible. It's not like mountainous. You've got the Rocky Mountains, which is very, very defensible, so that's a good fallback line. But like a place like Texas is just completely flat. It's completely flat, right? And if there's like large scale electronic warfare, right? And some of the jets get shot down. At that point, like Texas is just, it's just a sitting duck. Like the cartels are going to use their heavy duty drones. their electronic warfare, their jamming and whatnot, right? And, let's say for whatever reason, the jets are no longer usable, right? Maybe it's because of, I don't know, like a mass salvo from, whatchamacallit, like one of the adversaries of America, or maybe like a sub-state actor has used like suit casings or whatever. Everyone's panicking. But if in that case, right, you cannot take out a 200 mile per hour drone with your sniper rifle or whatever, right? Because it's going to be low altitude. It's going to fly in your face, right? And it doesn't matter if you're like, I don't know, 30 years military experience or like 20 years military experience or whatever, and you're all jacked and you've got like 12 different firearms. Like, bro, you're just going to die. You're just going to die because it all comes down to human reaction time. And human reaction time is a biological limit. 0.25 seconds on the high end, 0.15 seconds on the low end. You cannot outgrow those numbers. And so if you've got a 200 mile per hour drone coming at you at a, I don't know, a height of several dozen feet, you will not see it coming and you will die. You will perish. And not only will you die, all your bros will die who are like standing next to you or sitting next to you or hunkering down in the bunker next to you. All of you are going to die. That is the deterministic outcome, right? So you got to get on with the program. Like the world of warfare has changed. You got to understand that you flaunting off your firearms that way is not going to work. You need to be covert. You need to almost be like a guerrilla fighter in more ways than one. And you need to know what it is you're dealing with regard to the airspace.
I mean, you absolutely need to be more covert with it, and it's going to be a guerrilla warfare situation. I mean, what I generally expect is it will follow in a lot of ways. I always look back to fall of the Western Roman Empire, and what basically happened was the Western Rome started losing territory gradually to the Visigoths. It was dealing with a lot of issues at once. And they didn't have the resources to defend Britannia. They didn't have the resources to defend Hispania. And then it just, by the time it's done, it wasn't even so much they were losing wars. It's just other people came in under their noses, set up their own governments, and the Romans could no longer kick them out. Yeah,
That's
that's
basically
kind
what it
of
is.
where it is, Well, we're going to take back this land from, let's say a Texas thing. We're going to take this land back from these Mexicans. They could go back to their own country. Well, first of all, this was their country until after the Mexican-American War. So it's like, they've been here for centuries. They consider this their land. Number two, there's an awful lot of them, and like you, they also have guns. So, it's just let's be, again, this is just once again serious talk. Okay, what are we facing? Okay, we got a lot of people here who have guns. They also have backing from large, powerful military, large, powerful sub-state organizations who are capable of projecting military.
No, people need to take this seriously, but like most of the time the retort they make is, oh, well, Mexicans can't fight. Oh, Latin Americans, they can't fight and all this stuff. Like, bro, come on. Like, really? You wanna say that stuff? Like, it's this argument is no different from saying like Chinese people cannot fight because they've had like a bad series of defeats last few decades or so against the Japanese or what have you, right? This is complete nonsense, right? We have to look at the practical mathematical realities, right? Right? The guy with the drones, the guy with the cheap stuff, the guy with the technology that is reliable, that's teachable, that's transferable, and which can be built in bulk, right? Indigenously. Right now, the cartels, the warlord element, right? The criminal element, they've got it. And America bros, you don't got it. You ain't got it. So you're in trouble, right? And even if they can't fight, they can just beat you with sheer numbers, right? It doesn't matter if you're like, I don't know, a 20-year sniper veteran or whatever you want to call yourself, you've with like a million medals. All he has to do is fire 20 drones at you and you're dead. That's the reality you're in, right? Doesn't matter if you've got 50 more IQ points or whatever, you'll be dead, right?
I
Ultimately, it
think
comes
that's
to
an
boys with their
American
toys.
thing is the gadgetry and toy fetish is like, you'll hear that. I think was it Eric Swalwell, the guy who was dating the Chinese spy, said, hey, go ahead, have a rebellion against the US government. You've got like AR-15s, we've got nukes. It's like, Okay, nobody seems to understand once you get done clearing out the field with your fancy toys, you have to put boots on the ground to hold the territory. No, that's just like whenever you hear, oh, we've got X air power. Well, that's wonderful. Now that you've bombed the hell out of this base, how are you going to take and hold it? How are you going to defend it when other members of the cartel come to take it back? That
Yeah,
you need
exactly.
soldiers for. Do you have the soldiers to do that? Do you honestly and seriously believe that the cartel members don't know how to fight?
I mean, many of them
Stop and
do.
if you really do you genuinely believe that people who, shoot at each other for a living don't know how to shoot at you?
I mean, from
Again,
their
it
point
gets
of
into
view,
that. Yeah.
From their point of view, they're like, oh, they're just criminals. They only know how to shoot when they've got the advantage. Well, I mean, what else are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to shoot when you don't have the advantage? Right? So, no, I mean, it's hubris. It's basically hubris and arrogance. And like most of these people are like, oh, we've got all this military-aged men. Some of them were serving and whatnot. Like when they get activated, it's game over for these criminals. I mean, bro, listen, right? These people, they work as mercenaries around the world. Some of them are dying in mass in Ukraine. Some of them have been sent to West Asia where they get clocked by the Islamic Resistance over and over again. And some of them are in Latin America, right? Working as like freelancers and stuff. They get macheted to death. They get shot to death. They die everywhere, right? The American Superman is not a Superman. He's just a regular dude who bleeds and dies like everyone else, right? And at least for the past few decades or so, that is precisely what he has shown, right? The step herder gene or whatever we want to call it, right, is not going to activate and they're going to die en masse. And unless you guys take this more seriously and you're like, you know what, we don't want to die en masse, let's not have senseless killing, let's figure out how to live with one another amiably, right? Unless you get to that frame of reference, you're going to keep getting defeated, right? Because that mindset at the micro level, when you expand it outwards and you take it to the macro level, you get the American Empire, basically. And the American Empire has come to its logical conclusion, which is tri-civilizational conflict, right? Being surrounded on all sides and basically getting the Israel treatment. That's basically what America is getting right now. It's getting the Israel treatment right now. It doesn't know it yet, but it's basically being boiled like a frog on all sides.
Oh, that's the other thing I'd wanted to mention with the protests. The big danger for Israel, even more, I would say, than a potential Kent State, which could be huge, is the protests are bringing up the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. They've brought it to the front row. A year ago, before this whole war started, BDS was something that was a few radical lefty. BDS was like, say, what animal rights were 15 years ago. Okay, crunchy hippie granola vegan types are really into this stuff. We think it's kind of silly, but that's fine. So it's like that's, and Israel can't survive sanctions. They can't.
Precisely.
South America. I mean, South Africa couldn't survive sanctions. Israel doesn't have as much land as South Africa does. Israel doesn't have as many indispensable minerals to sell.
Like Israel can only survive so long as the pipeline from America continues as is, right? But it cannot survive if that pipeline is cut partially or fully, right? The fact of the matter is that every year it gets about $4 to $5 billion from the Americans, right? And most of it actually goes into not just the military, but all these other things, right? I mean, I think good sir, I was telling you that Israel has this like $600 billion economy, and they import like $5 billion plus worth of food. Right? Like that right there tells you that this society cannot survive in the case of sanctions. Like if you're importing, right? And like food is one of the cheaper things in life, right? Compared to like military or all these other areas. But if you're importing $5 billion worth of food yearly, my friend, you are not a self-sufficient society, right? And as you're getting cooked and slow-balled on all sides and your trade gets shut down as well, yeah, you're basically headed towards social collapse at that point.
I also seem to remember a fair number of Israel's farms, some of the most fertile land is in the north of Israel, and I wonder how much of it is in northern parts of the formerly the northern parts of Israel.
Yeah, precisely.
You know, they're
Precisely.
like they are losing territory in the north. There's no, they're not, I do not see Israel getting that territory in the north back. They'd have to pretty much completely conquer Hezbollah and shove this battle all the way up to Beirut to like cement that.
Yeah, I mean, considering how they couldn't even beat the Islamic Resistance, who are like, what, 10 times weaker than Hezbollah with regard to weapon systems. But in terms of men, they're roughly equivalent, right, with regard to fighting age men and whatnot. But like Hezbollah's got better gadget, better toys, basically. They've got like actual missile systems and whatnot, actual anti-air. Yeah, it's not happening. I mean, they can do like a massacre at Rafah, right, which they've been talking about for 4 or 5 months
I'm
straight. They can
noticing
like
they've
move.
been talking about that massacre at Rafah so far. They haven't invaded Rafah, and I do wonder how much of that is because they're afraid that if we invade Rafah and the world gets too outraged, Iran might be sending like some of those hypersonics to the Knesset this time.
Oh no, that's basically what they said. Like Iran has said flat out, and I've got a essay probably coming out tomorrow about this, which is that, well, Iran has basically said that the era of strategic patience is over, right? So no, that's basically what they're worried about. And again, the other thing they're worried about is Egypt, right? Because Egypt, like Al-Sisi's a, puppet. We all know this, right? But the people of Egypt would not stand for Al-Sisi letting Rafah happen. Right? Because for those of our dear listeners and readers who are not aware, Rafah is a border town, right? And there's a Palestine Rafah and an Egypt Rafah. And in many cases, right, you've got family living on both sides of the border. So in many ways, attacking Rafah is the same as attacking Egypt, right? Because you're basically at that point, you're also killing Egyptian citizens en masse, right? So I think that's also the main reason why the attack has not happened, because they've not gotten to the point where they can say, okay, hey, our puppet in the White House, Joe Biden, he's told us that nothing's going to happen. The puppet, Al-Sisi, he will do his thing, and the Egyptians will not rise up in revolt and push us back, basically, right? So they've not gotten that assurance yet. So I think that's why the attack hasn't gone ahead.
I mean, if I were an Arab leader right now who was being lavishly funded by America, I'd be losing an awful lot of sleep.
Yep,
I mean,
precisely.
if I were like, if I were the ruler of Jordan, Egypt, anybody who's essentially there because they're being financially supported by the United States is like, it's also for the first time, Palestine has always been a bigger issue on the Arab streets than it has been with like, Arab leadership. But now Arab leadership is forced to listen to the streets because it's become such a big thing.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. Yeah, no, I mean, either they're going to listen, they're going to get on with the program, or they're going to be toppled. And we're fast headed in that direction, especially now. Now that it's becoming clear that the American Empire is ex you know overstretched and everything. And look, people in that part of the world, people in this part of the world, they are not, they're not dumb, right? They know that America's on its last legs, and that's why they're pushing so hard, right? They smell victory, right? They smell victory. They're like, we are very close to not only liberating Palestine and Masjid al-Aqsa, but we're very close to even just getting rid of all these borders, like reverse Berlin Wall style. You break the borders down, and rather than like multiple like new Eastern European countries forming, instead what you have is multiple West Asian countries ceasing to exist, right? So we can smell and taste victory at this point, right? And the Americans are like doing their stuff. They're sending their emissaries to Japan and China and all these other places, but they're basically failing in real time as we speak.
Yeah, no, it's we because we've shown weakness, and it's you can't once the imperial subjects realize that the emperor can be beaten, they start making nice with the person who just beat the emperor.
Yeah, that's basically what happened in Roman times as well, as the Western Roman Empire was falling apart, right? And look, folks back then, they're like, oh, well, we Romans can fight these barbarian savages. All they can do is ride on horseback and shoot arrows at us from a distance, right? Oh, you know, these people, they don't know how to fight. They're coward. They're... Like, we've all heard this before. Like, come on, okay? Like, you're losing. You're getting defeated, right? Just be a man and just admit that you're getting your ass kicked. Like, if America was still like empire that actually counted for something, right? Russia would not be in the current position it's in right now. It would have, I don't know, been sanctioned to death, right? In Ukraine, it would have bled dry and so on and so forth. But no, what's happening right now is Ukraine is falling apart and Russia is probably going to come out of the war stronger than it entered it, right? So already all the warning signs have already been there, basically.
Taking Russian money, that was another. Bank heads were telling the US government, don't do this. It's going to set a bad precedent. People are going to start dumping their treasuries, their bonds, their stocks, and that's what happened.
Precisely.
You know, you again, at a time when you know, I mean, or you should know if you're in the US government, certainly if you're in the diplomatic or the foreign, you know, services corps, you should know the consequences of losing the petrodollar. So what are you trying to do? You know, you're engaging in behavior that encourages people to dump, you know, US dollars.
Yeah, precisely. And now we also know, good sir, because of Philip Pilkington's paper, we now know what that actual number is, right? The actual number is 74 point something dollars per day. And if you that's with the petrodollar and without the petrodollar, you go down to 32 point something dollars a day, right? That's like revolution style numbers right there. Like, do you really want that to happen? Do you really want like mass civil war, carnage, and brutality to break out? Like, I think honestly, some of these people, they do not understand these things, right? Or they have like this imperial religion, right? They've got this imperial faith that, oh, America will never collapse, there will never be a revolution, you know, we are the exceptional nation, yada yada yada, right? And even if it gets really, really bad, you know, it's not, there's not gonna be like hundreds of thousands of people on the street who wish to kill me, right? It'll always be fine. I think honestly, at this point, it's just like delusion. I think that's what's going on over here.
Well, I think very, very much so. I've always tried to tell people, you'll hear people, you certainly hear them on like the Gabs and the True Socials of the world that really think they want the world to collapse so it can be Mad Max world and they could be riding around in their like Jeep with their guns and their collection of concubines. And it's like, you don't want that war because, first of all, that's not what it's going to look like. It's not going to look like Mad Max. It looks like, you know, your grand, it looks like your family grows up poorer than you did, and your grandchildren grow up poorer than your children did. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, precisely. No, like I forget Malcolm Tune had that quote. It's like, oh yeah, society's gonna collapse and my ideology is gonna rise up from the ashes. Like, bro, if you believe that, do you really think that you're the only one who thinks like that? Like, do you really think that? Because this is like what happened when the Qing dynasty fell apart. Like, you had all these warlords who had that exact same idea. They're like, oh, well, as soon as the Qing dynasty falls apart, my ideology is going to rise. Like, bro, they all thought that and they all rose up at the same time. That's basically what happened, right? And you're going to have a similar situation.
I mean, it's, and I keep telling the ethno state people, look, you know, I am not saying to my listeners, I'm not saying I agree with this. I am saying this is the contention of a lot of the people who are running the ethno states, is that the Jews control the media, they control the banks, they control the US government, they control social media. They can't sell an ethno state right now. Again, by your own terms, these people have like more power than you'll ever have, and they're getting raked over the coals over an ethno state. How do you intend to sell yours? Not telling you you can't do it. I'm telling you, you know, right now, that's a really unpopular choice.
Precisely. No, like people want to pursue an idea which has no popular support behind it, right? Like even inside, like you were saying, right? Like a lot of white people don't even support this idea, right? Inside your own borders, right? And you're like, oh, well, they don't matter because the fighting age men support us. Okay, bro. Well, the fighting age men don't grow up in a vacuum, right? Like if you have a bunch of fighting age men, let's say you have like 300 plus fighting age men under your command. Well, you have to motivate them to fight, right? They need to fight for a reason. They can't simply fight for like, oh, you know, I feel a lot of anger in my heart. That's why I'm going to fight. Like, bro, emotion is a nice complement, but it's a necessary condition. It's not a sufficient condition, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is they need to have a reason to fight, right? If you're a Ukrainian, for example, and you live with your girlfriend in your apartment with your five dogs, you don't really have a reason to fight, right? You're like, okay, whatever. Like, you know, girlfriend ran away to Dubai. Now she's like, I know, pimping. Now she's like being pimped by one of the oil sheikhs. And here I am in my awful life being drafted to fight the Russians. Like, you don't have a reason to fight, right? And the thing is, right, most of these people in the States, unfortunately, right, the so-called, like, what's the word I'm looking for, right? The so-called fighting age men, most of them don't have a reason to fight. They don't have large families, so they don't have wife and kids behind them. They don't have like a clan superstructure behind them, which they're sworn to protect, number one. Number two, right, most people will not support them. Right. And the morale element is not going to be there. That's number two. Number three, I think I mentioned it over and over again, the cartel element, the fact that, you know, 20 drones and you're dead. It doesn't matter if you're like a dude with like 20 years of sniper experience or what have you, right? So no, all these things. And the worst part is these people seem to think that even with all of those against them, they can somehow still like pursue their ethnostate thing. Like, bro, at that point, all I gotta say is, you know, you gotta learn on the battlefield the hard way. Like, you gotta fight, you gotta get your ass whooped, and you know, that's basically what's going to happen, right? And the idea that, okay, Civil War 2.0 breaks out, the country balkanizes, now we're officially the warlord era or the Sengoku era of America, and somehow the rest of the world is not going to do anything. Like, you know, when the Chinese fell apart, right? And then they had that revival thing, right? The Boxer Rebellion, right? They're like, okay, we're going to kick out the foreigners, we're going to do our thing. You know, China has to go back to Confucian values. Like, what do you think happened? There was an eight-nation alliance that showed up and they beat up the Chinese, right? And like a lot of these guys, like the Italians, the Austria-Hungary Empire, and then the Germans, like a lot of these guys did not have any real interest in China, right? But they realized that, okay, well, if the Chinese stand up and they kick out the British and French, then we're in trouble, right? Because that sets a precedent. And so we cannot let that happen and we have to keep China down. So that's basically what they did, right? They didn't really have too many land interests, right? And so that's a similar thing is going to happen to America, right? As soon as this thing pops off, they're going to have all that domestic turmoil. They're not going to have that support inside their own borders. And they're going to be attacked on all sides by Russia, by China, probably by the Indians, and perhaps by large segments of the Muslim world, right? And the thing is, right, they don't have to conquer the entire country. Like, America is not going to be conquered, right? It's got 9.6 million square kilometers. There's like Rocky Mountains. There's all this like defensible terrain in there. But like what's going to happen is the coastal cities are going to be taken away, right? So it's going to be like the concession system of the late Qing dynasty, right? And these places are going to be like the big cities where like foreigners own the show, and they're going to starve the inland, right? So everyone inside, like I don't know, with your high IQ genes and whatnot, you guys are not going to have food for like I don't know, for every 3 weeks, you're only going to have food for like 7 days of that. So that's basically the future you're headed towards.
Yeah, that I could I've assumed that at some point, if America was falling apart, it's fairly clear at this point that the professional managerial class is more loyal to its class than it is to the idea of America. And I could absolutely see the Americans calling in UN soldiers or even Chinese soldiers to help restore order. I mean, knowing the Chinese aren't going to leave, but they don't have any kind of feeling of particular patriotism, and it could benefit them.
Well, from their point of view, right, they don't have to conquer the country. All they really have to do, see, from their point of view, it's like, okay, well, the Americans are crazy. They bombed our embassy in Yugoslavia. They destroyed it. And they try to kill our people all the time. They try to steal our stuff. They try to assassinate our business people. Like, why on earth? This mad dog known as America, why on earth should we allow them to go off easy? Well, no, we're not going to. So what we're going to do is we're going to send our people, we're going to take over the coastal cities, and we're going to shut down the food. We're gonna shut down the food and the trade, and like these guys, they want to hunker down in the Rocky Mountains and fight us. All right, go for it, right? But we're gonna starve you, and we're gonna make your life miserable. It's basically gonna be century of humiliation for the Western world. That's basically what it's gonna be.
Yeah, well, if yeah, that I will say, if they control the coast, it is a common technique to use food as a political bargaining chip. Yeah, it's
Oh,
one
it's
of
being
it's
used
been
against.
forever.
It's being used against Yemen's Ansarullah like for 10 plus years. Like, people have to understand that when the Saudis invaded, they didn't just invade. Like, their master, right? Like, the Saudis are a puppet, we all know that, right? But their master, America, had like a massive sanctions campaign, which continues till today, right? And most of the people in Yemen, right, all these fighting age men, all these men with like lots of like experience operating Kalashnikovs, building sea mines, and like operating drones and everything, most of them died not to the war itself, but to the famine and the starvation and the disease, right? And also the kids as well, and the women and whatnot. So it's similar things gonna happen to America, basically. And it's like there's not gonna be a lot of like hurt feelings like when it does happen, right? So, you know, you'll have Russians and Chinese and like the Indian world and, you know, the Muslim world. You're gonna have like these coastal cities, the inland, large parts of it might be annexed simply because the warlords that operate in the post-American what you call it, the post-American landscape, they'll annex it by fighting one another. But what's going to happen is they'll most of them, the more successful ones, will be in the defensive terrain. So it's going to be the mountains and all that other stuff which you can't really like invade properly, right? And which is very, very easy to defend. So that's going to be just the that's going to be the future of America, right? Like, I mean, Mao Zedong, right, who basically unified China at the end of the Civil War and the Warlord era, right? He basically was in Shaanxi province. I think that's where he was. Like, Shaanxi is like a big mountain fortress, like in the middle of China, right? So it's going to be like one of those people that you know, ends the century of humiliation. But until then, yeah, it's going to be a century of humiliation.
I mean, I could expect definitely seeing with the collapse of America, you will see at a bare minimum the same kind of financial looting and pillaging that you saw with the collapse of the Soviet Union. You know,
Oh yeah.
that's
Oh
the
yeah.
best you can hope for. You know, even if they don't try to deliberately starve you, they're going to come in and basically take everything from America that's not nailed down.
Oh, they're already doing it. They're already doing it. Like all the bigger African countries like Nigeria and these places, right? They've already recalled all their stuff, and many of them are already putting in formal requests saying that okay, the gold that we parked with you guys, yeah, we want it back because we do not trust your system anymore, right? Like, you guys are openly saying that we are going to seize the $300 billion of Russian assets, and President Putin is saying, okay, in ex you know, if you do that, we will seize all $288 billion of Western assets. Like, we cannot trust you guys. Like, you guys are crazy. We cannot give you our stuff to park, so we're just getting out of here. And yeah, please give us back our gold. So.
Yeah, that's okay. So you've got, again, all I see all around is everybody is losing confidence in the United States. You know, except the
Yeah,
people who run things. They're confident as
precisely.
ever.
Precisely.
But
Yeah,
that's, you
no.
know, we're just, yeah, we are headed for, we're having this crisis where we are run by like this Dunning-Kruger effect. You know, professional managerial classes. America is not going to die on the battlefield. We're going to die like suicide by stupidity. I mean,
My
everything
goodness.
our government has been doing so far, everything our diplomatic class has been doing, it's sort of like, okay, given our situation, what should we not do? You know, well, maybe we shouldn't antagonize like extra parties to throw into this mess. We know this is a multipolar battle. Okay, we haven't learned how to live in a multipolar world. This is a balancing act. You know, we can no longer bluff, bluster, and threaten like we're the only player on the block.
Yeah.
We can't, you
No,
know,
I
and it's
mean,
and we keep doing it.
yeah, I mean, apparently that's like, you know, it's like a senile old man who's got like terminal cancer, and he's just ranting and raving away like he's hot stuff. Like, bro, you're not the boss of the mafia. You're not the don of the mafia anymore. You're just some idiot old man in the freaking, in the freaking old home. That's what you are, right? Like, but America has not grown out of it, unfortunately, right? They still think they're hot stuff. So I feel sorry for them. I really do. I feel sorry for them. I think I republished one of my essays from back in the day on my stack, Chronicle of a Duo, Chronicle of a Debt Foretold, right? Chronicle of a Debt Foretold is fascinating. It's
The
about
Marquez, the
Santiago
Garcia
Nasser.
Marquez book.
Santiago Nasser, right? But like the book is amazing because the book opens with the words, on the morning that they were going to kill him, Santiago Nasser got up at 5:30 in the morning to wait for the boat. The bishop was coming on, right? So, like, everyone knows from the beginning till the end, everyone knows that Santiago Nasser is going to be murdered, right? But the only person who doesn't know is Santiago Nasser, right? And I think only in the last few paragraphs he realizes that, okay, the Vicario brothers are about to murder him. But, like, the only thing he feels at that point, the only emotion left for him to feel is like bewilderment. And I think, honestly, like, America's headed in that direction. Like, the so-called elite, the so-called leaders, they will be the last to realize that, okay, America's about to be conquered, right? And they're gonna be like, oh my gosh, but this is not supposed to happen. We're the exceptional nation, right? We are the, we are God's chosen on earth, right? Manifest destiny and all this other stuff, shining city on a hill, so on and so forth. So it's gonna be bewildering when it happens, right? But I think large segments of the American people already know what's about to come. And they're preparing adequately, right? So that's the situation we're in, I think.
Yeah, I think people know. I think deep, a lot of people know deep down, but they don't want to admit it because it's terrifying. That's one of the reasons I think in America we have so many of these extended maps of who rules the world, who runs the world. It's because the Americans are starting to realize that maybe all of those ideas we always had about freedom and democracy were lies. Maybe things are different now. Maybe America is no longer the strongest nation on earth. What do we do from here? And so they panic. They go into stuff like Q-tardation. They go, they try to go, that just. They go through all of these things, and it doesn't, it becomes this effort to escape reality, and you can't really escape reality. As they used to say back when I was a kid and we played role-playing games, you don't get a saving throw against reality. I mean, if reality happens
Pretty
to you,
much.
reality happens. It's not like you don't go back to the regen chamber and then start over from that part of the level. Reality is what it is, and you have to accept it. And I think Americans are having a very hard time with that.
Pretty much. No, I mean, they're having a hard time, and they've viewed the world through a certain lens for so long that they're finding it difficult to change. But at this point, right, it's like, survival of the fastest, honestly. Like, you need to have speed, and you need to have some determination, because if you guys don't quickly change your view of how the world works, right, you're gonna go the way of the dodo bird and the dinosaur, right? Because, like, already the American military establishment, like, the stuff that they say, like, it's just such a pack of lies with regard to, oh, missile defense. Like, missile defense is a complete joke. Like, missile defense is a complete joke. Like, the Iranians showed that. The Iranians showed that in Operation True Promise, right? So, no, I mean, no one's coming to save you. And really, what it comes down to is preparation. And I think Sir Cleveland Blakemore, he writes the Substack, Vault and Co. Communications, right? But he basically says the same thing. It's like, well, no one's really coming to save you, and you're on your own, and you have to basically prepare accordingly, right? But unfortunately, a lot of people have not gotten to that point yet. They're kind of like spasming, and like you said, Q-tardation and all this other like conspiracy stuff. Because, it's lazy. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel that there's like a grander plan or whatnot. There's no plan. There's no plan. No one's coming to save you. You need to save yourself. That's basically what it comes down to.
And I've also seen the other thing, the like I call it the dysfunctional doomerism. It's like understanding that things are bad is useful because you can react accordingly to them. Throwing up your hands and declaring that things are hopeless is really counterproductive. And, you see this so much in the right, well, hey, we had, this is happening. I remember it's like, it looks like Biden may lose Michigan because he's alienated the Muslim vote so badly. Then you get immediately, oh, it doesn't matter. They'll just print more ballots and like he'll get through any. It's like, okay, that may be true, but you've given up already. And it's, and not only have you given up, you're openly hostile to everybody who wants to do something.
Precisely. At this point, right, like even the Joe Biden thing, they're like, oh, print more ballots and he's going to get away with it. Like, I don't see it happening, honestly, because last time when they did the whole shenanigans, right, COVID was still a thing, right? But, back then, okay, COVID was still a thing. You could do the mail-in ballot shenanigans. But how are they going to do it this time? I'm not seeing it, right? And even if he squeaks in, like, let's say he miraculously wins. I mean, at that point, no one will trust the election system anymore. And, the country's social social underpinnings, whatever little is left, will also buckle and fall apart. I don't see a good outcome. Like, whether Trump wins or Biden wins, I just see these problems are no longer political problems. These are problems which are so fundamental to the entity known as the United States of America. The cultural, social, military, etc. fabric is just completely ruined, right? So electing someone else is not going to change these, I think.
Yeah, that's the first thing is anytime I hear people screaming, Brandon, let's go, Brandon, we need to we need to throw Biden in, Biden pedophile, Sleepy Joe. And it's like, fine, Biden is a repulsive human being, oh God, the Trump fascism. Fine, Trump is also a repulsive human being, but let me let you in on a little secret. It's not going to, as you just pointed out, it won't make an enormous difference whether like Trump or Biden is in the office. They're inheriting an empire that's falling apart. It's like, it doesn't matter. Julius Caesar might not be able to hold the American empire together at this point. Hannibal might have a hard time holding it together. Neither Trump nor Biden are Hannibals.
Yeah. And if you offered them, like if you like brought them back with a time machine, you're like, hey, bro, you want to hold this together? They'll be like, no, thank you. Like what? War, pornography, usury, and materialism. You want me to defend that? No, thank you.
That's like one of the problems. We don't really, there's no center. I mean, Islam, like the Ummah, okay, not everybody in the Ummah is an observant Muslim. Not everybody follows all the rules of Islam, but there's a central pillar for moral judgments, that everybody pretty much looks to and agrees on. We don't have that anymore. There is really no central pillar. And we also run into the problem that do whatever you want so long as nobody gets hurt. That's basically a mother telling her kids to go play in the backyard while she mixes a drink. That doesn't, that's not a moral code. And it doesn't work. And it just, ultimately, as something I found, after a couple of decades, living like in kind of like flying a freak flag is, there is no bottom.
No, it's tragic. It's tragic. And, like mom telling the kid to do whatever at the back. I mean, that's like a recipe for disaster, right? And that's at the individual level, like at the country level, like that's awful, right? So, no, I mean, I don't see people fighting for the West. I don't, right? Some of them might, but, why would you fight for something like that, right? Why would you fight for war, pornography, usury, and materialism, right? You would much rather see it fall apart and like burn up in flames, right? Go up in flames, rather.
You told a whole generation patriotism is a bad thing. Now you exactly. want them to be patriotic when people are pointing guns at them?
Yeah, it's not going to work.
No, what was it C.S. Lewis said? We have men, we create men without chests, and then we wonder like why, there are no brave men anymore. We tolerate, it's basically you get the society you tolerate.
There you go. There you go. No, it's a basket case. It's a complete basket case, good sir. And yeah, I mean, all the doom cometh, all the crises are converging, right? These things might seem unrelated to some, but for many others, right? It really comes down to convergence, right? How many of these crises are converging, right? Whether it's the Japanese that are about to default on their US treasuries, or whether it's the Chinese realizing that, okay, the Americans are about to sanction us, so let's just buy up everything in the world, whether it's copper or like food or like gold or like silver, let's just get ready for that. And whether it's like, Israel about to be destroyed and Ukraine falling apart and, Kent State 2.0 happening, right? So all of these are now converging onto one sequence of events.
Yeah, and it all has, those all have one common basic root cause is that America is no longer the effective world policeman. And I mean, for better or worse, we did get 30 years of a lot of little wars, but no really big ones. Now, as America falls, it looks like we may be getting a big one again. So, to give credit where credit's due, I mean, however, what happened is our empire got too big. You can't rule the entire world. Where, like, we have military bases pretty much everywhere in the world except, North Korea, Iran, and maybe a couple other countries. And for
And the
what?
thing, yeah, exactly. And the thing is, right, it's not just gonna be like one war, it's gonna be simultaneous. World War III is gonna be on multiple fronts, and Civil War 2.0 is gonna be at the same time, right? So, and like world hegemony trying to rule the entire world, like you try to gain the world and you lose yourself. That's basically what's happening here. You
Yeah, so
lose
you
your own
basically
nation.
get a defeated country that got its clock cleaned in a war and has like everything falls apart. And then when it's done, the former ruling dynasty is being rounded up and shot. And we have a new rule, like a new ruling class trying to bring together all the different fragments of like what used to be the Russian Empire. This is starting to sound like 1917.
I mean, if it is 1917, at least like what do we call it? The at least there was a Lenin, right? But I don't see an American Lenin. I'm not seeing him, right? Maybe he's gonna prove us all wrong and he's gonna appear, but for the time being, good sir, I'm not seeing like a leadership to fill
I
up
don't,
this
yeah,
vacuum
we,
that we're about to happen.
everybody is so afraid of like the Hitler rising, the charismatic strongman. I don't really see any charismatic strongman on the horizon. I'm certainly, Trump is charismatic, but he's not a strongman. I mean, it's
Exactly. He's a
Donald Trump. I had
businessman.
that comment. I remember having, I think I had this conversation with Jamari Ali. Sorry, I never could pronounce that name, was with Trump. It's like, Trump could have been Caesar. Trump could have crossed the Rubicon, with on that day and said, like, I think we all know these are fake. He could have gotten a few governors to go along with it, and like things could have gotten very, very tense, but there could have been, he could have forced a recount. He had his shot at becoming Caesar if he crossed the Rubicon. He dipped his toe in and then backed off, and that's why he's in all the trouble he's in now.
There we go. There we go. No, I mean, people like to what you call it, complain about Trump, but Trump is actually like the most moderate of shall we say fascist dictators. That I mean, the guy's like a New York billionaire. He's like a businessman. Like the thing with business people is that unless they have combat experience or unless they've been in the military or something, most business people have a very, very conciliatory attitude. They always want to seek compromise. They always want to like negotiate their way out. They don't like settle problems with their fists. That's not what business people do for the most part. There are exceptions, right? But like, Trump is that kind of person, right? So no, if there is going to be an American Caesar, it's going to be someone that's far more radical than Trump.
Yeah, I mean, you're there? Hold on, I got something. Yep, okay, I got something jumping. Oh, that's my audacity thing. Yeah, no, I was just getting a weird bug on the screen there. Yeah, no, Trump, it always gets back down to if Trump were one tenth the fascist you think he is, It wouldn't be J6 protesters who are in jail. It would be Antifa people. It would be, nobody, I don't recall Paul Krugman and Robert Reich getting hit with like tax audits that suddenly found them owing millions, followed by like a bunch of bogus lawsuits and lawfare and using the tax bait, like ta like and using tax collectors against people. That's the first thing dictators do. It's much easier and cleaner than beating somebody. But I don't remember any of that happening. Nobody in the resistance, just imagine you went to Saudi Arabia and decided you were going to protest the House of Saud by presenting the leader of the House of Saud as a baby in a diaper. You're going to run through the streets through talking about like how he's a baby and he throws tantrums and he does. What would the immediate reaction be?
You would be in the black site, which is jointly run by the American CIA and the Saudi secret police.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't, but none of that happened to any of the people that were protesting Trump.
Yeah.
That's,
no,
so
like
that right
people
there.
have it easy. Yeah. People have it easy in America. People have it easy in America. They have this idea that tyranny is a certain thing. It's not, folks. Like, tyranny is when the guy takes you to the black site and he puts your hands in the brine, right, in the salt water, pulls it out, and then he starts plucking your fingernails out one by one, right? And then he keeps dipping it back into the brine over and over again to make sure that you really feel it and you really get the message of what it is they're wishing to communicate to you, right? So, no, like, Americans have not experienced that yet. I mean, the way things are going, they're kind of headed in that direction, right? Simply because that if you have a warlord era, like a warlord era where the cartels run things, the cartels are going to basically do stuff like that. And they're going to use like machetes to disembowel people and do all that stuff. I mean, look, if this is the future Americans want, then they should just keep doing more of the same. They should keep antagonizing China. They should keep antagonizing India. They should keep antagonizing Russia. They should keep like sending money to Israel to bomb like women and kids. They should keep making enemies. Keep doing that stuff. And then, this is the future you've built with your own hands. So, I mean, at this point, I'm, like the way I view it is, I'm not their dad or their brother or whatever. I'm not their uncle. I'm just a guy telling them, look, you're committing actions X, Y, and Z. Here are the consequences of your actions. That's what it is.
Yeah. Right, so. I mean, I think at this point, a hard economic downturn is inevitable. It's inescapable. We can put it off, but the longer we put it off, the harder it's going to crash when it crashes. What's not inevitable is recognizing this is going to happen, coming up with solutions that will limit the damage, disentangling yourself from situations that will get you involved in a costly war that you can't win. That's what you do. That's the smart thing to do. The problem is you can't really do that in America because immediately the people who get rich off the wars will be financing people to explain how you're a coward and you don't understand American greatness and you're yada yada, like you'll wind up hitting a propaganda machine going against you. And we've already seen the propaganda machine will promote wars we can't win.
Yep, that's basically their entire business model at this point. It's like a bunch of these like functionaries in a bunch of these like big Ivy League names and other universities, and their whole spiel is like, okay, let's fight this. I mean, and let me actually say a few words about this. Like John Mearsheimer, who I have respect for because he's a smart man, right? But he's talking about this like, oh, we should not fight the Russians in Ukraine because we should focus on China instead. Like, bro, you cannot fight in China. You can't even send ships to China. Like, if China wants to kill you, China can kill you, right? In their own backyard, right? Because of the shipbuilding and the, like, what you can call it? The full spectrum dominance that they have in the area, they don't even have to invade Taiwan. They can just enact a naval blockade. And Taiwan will basically surrender at that point, right? You can't do anything about that. Like the amount of copium and hopium these people have, like I'm baffled by something. I'm like, bro, like you should know these things. It's not like you're an unintelligent person. You should know how the world works.
I think I've seen this happen with the boomers. I happen to have been born on the cusp of Gen X in the boomer era. So I've seen this with the older boomers. They offer advice. Well, if you just try hard, you'll succeed, yada, yada. And they mean well, but they're giving advice that worked when they were teenagers. Yes, in the 1960s and 1970s, if you worked hard and and you went to college and you got an education, you could wind up with the house and a vacation home in America. They don't, and they give this advice and they don't understand why people get angry with them for it. And it's not because they're bad people, it's because they don't understand the world has changed. And that's the same problem you have with America's diplomatic class. It's you have people who this is the way it's always been, and they live in an insulated, a very insulated, very insular community. They don't really hear how bad things are, and if they do, they could dismiss it because it's not really happening to them. So that, I mean, that's where we are right now. We've got people that are fighting the previous war, who still think that it's like 1995 in the world, and they have no consequences to tell them that it's not until all the consequences come in at once.
Yeah, and I think there's also a bias here in the sense that the baby boomer generation, right? For most of their life, America had industry, America had muscle, America had military, and so on and so forth, right? And it's only in the last few years, right? Like, if you've been around for, like, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years, right? And you're like, oh, well, for 40 years of my life, America meant something on the world stage. And then only in the last 5 to 10 years, right, things have gone wrong. Well, it makes perfect sense for you to think that, you know what, this is just like a temporary thing. We'll get back to business as usual. The problem is that, good sir, like you were saying, all at once, right? Decline and collapse and implosion, these things are exponential. And the thing with us humans is that, when we learn mathematics, we can kind of like do mathematics on paper and we can be like, okay, I understand exponential functions. I know how to like use the operators and so on and so forth. But you don't actually understand how to think exponentially, right? Like, if you told someone that, hey, I'm going to take one step and then I'm going to take two steps after that, then I'm going to take four steps, right? And, how many steps will I have taken by the time I, this pattern is repeated to like 30, right, or something, right? And then nobody can answer. And then you basically tell them that actually, by the time I get to number 30, I'll be at the moon, right? So, like, people don't understand this stuff, right? They think that they understand exponential thing, but they don't. And I think, unfortunately, for the baby boomer generation, they're kind of in a similar situation, right? So.
Yeah, they get a lot of hate from people, and it's what really happened is the baby boomers had the good fortune to be born during a time of unparalleled prosperity in the United States. We have the space age, we've put men on the moon, we have a world empire, we're the greatest, freest country in the world, yada yada. And it was easy to believe that at the time because you were seeing so many successes. And it's you think, well, this is a temporary failure, and I don't think people understand. No, the underlying principles have changed. The fundamentals, we don't have the resources we have, we don't have the manufacturing base we had, we don't have the ability to project power we had. And that's it. They just don't get that.
They don't get that, and they don't understand exponential thinking, I think. They see the decline. They see the decline, but from their point of view, it's like, oh, well, 5, 10 years of decline. But hey, for most of my teenage years and most of my other adult life, for 20, 30 years, America was on top. So we're just going to go back to that time period again, right? So for that, they're trying to view it in cyclical terms, right? They're not viewing it in exponential terms, right? They think it's like a sine wave. It's like, oh, up and down. Like, no, bro, it's a freaking, it's a freaking, what do you call it? It's a
It's a
freaking
catabolic
exponential graph.
collapse.
It's a catabolic collapse. That's what it is. There we go, right? So,
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, the doom cometh, as I say. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we just have to start understanding that. Just understand that things aren't what they, understand that things aren't what they used to be. America's not what they used to be. If we want to have to rebuild our manufacturing base quickly in about 20 years, The only guy I can think of who actually succeeded in doing that with flying colors is Joseph Stalin, and I really don't think America is ready for 20 years of Stalinism to rebuild the military, to rebuild our industrial base.
I mean, there might be if the warlord era has like tens of millions of dead people and the criminal element is out of control and the foreigners are on your coastline starving you every day. And you think to yourself, you know what? You know what? What have I got to lose? Let me try out communism. Like, I've tried everything else out. We got our ass kicked in World War III. We're basically a country under occupation. We can't eat properly. If only I had a strong, charismatic dictator or leader like Stalin. That would actually be a good thing, right? That's the only situation that I see. But you're 100% right, good sir. Like all the other situations, the Americans would rather, drink rat poison than like, have communism in their country,
Yeah,
basically.
I mean that's the only, like that's the big example I can think of industrialization happening quickly with lots of state support and transforming a society. I mean, you'd essentially need Stalinist collectives or something along those lines. It wouldn't call itself communism in America, but you'd need that kind of a dictator who was willing to engage in that kind of economic micromanagement. And that's going to be a huge thing because America, today's American communists, I mean, today's American like conservatives, the free market is the idol they worship at.
Yeah. And the only way you get rid of an idol that you worship is that you get your face rubbed in the dirt. So until that happens for a long, long time, Americans are not gonna embrace those types of things. So.
No, I mean, I think America is, it's going to, I think Century of Humiliation is a good way of like, that's a good comparison. That's kind of where we're going. Like, that's where we're going.
I mean, it's not all bad because, like, all the top quality men are forged in the fire of battles. So you're going to have, like, a lot of top quality men coming out of the starvation, the mass disease, the massacres, and so on and so forth, right? So they're going to rise to the top because they'll have to, basically, right? In an ordinary world, in an ordinary life, they would have been, like, normal people. But in, like, these types of times, they'll be shaped, basically. So it's not all bad news.
Yeah, I mean, it also comes down to your life will be poorer, your life will be more constrained, you're going to have less access to health care, and that sucks. But on the other hand, is your life with all of these conveniences right now particularly happy? And if
Not
the
really.
answer is no, then can you make that life happier? Do you honestly believe, and I think many Americans do, that your happiness depends on like how many toys you have and how wealthy you are? If it does, I think that philosophy will die, with the collapse or the hard downturn of the American economy. And I think that will be, bury that one, like put a stick in it, it's done, and let it be gone. I think that American materialism has just gotten us in a whole lot of trouble since, we became the American Empire.
Yeah, no, the doom comet, good sir. And I think that's really, I think we can end it off there,
Yeah,
honestly.
the doom
Yeah,
cometh,
because
but
we got probably lots of other doomful material we could talk about,
oh,
but
we could talk about doom all week here. Yeah, no, doom's
yeah.
good.
But
I'm
let
sure next week we'll have hours of doom.
yeah, but like what I like to do is I like to say that you gotta let the meat marinate. You gotta let the meat cook a bit.
Yeah.
So we gotta let it cook a bit, I think. And then next week we can come back with more doom, gloom, and despair.
Sounds good to me. So on this end, guys. Until next week, the doom cometh. Talk to you next time. Take care.